In this episode, Andy Westwood, Professor of Government Practice at the University of Manchester, creates an imaginary university formed from a distinctive combination of red brick, plate glass and post-92 universities, as well as an FE component. Rottersley Rummage University, as we decide to call it, aims to be more than the sum of its parts, and presents itself as a university that doesn't know its place, but knows its place. It has a tiny medical school, but a huge social science offering too. The university also has a strong civic mission and an international profile, which is helped by the multinational makeup of the local football team. The university's federal structure is sufficient to confuse the rankers, and it also intends to push back firmly against the various regulatory authorities with the aim of creating a new framework for regulation for the sector. Music, drink and food are important here, and there's a massive students' union building which Andy expects to attract bigger acts than he managed when events manager at Manchester's SU. The only things banned at the university are service hubs, and in terms of the campus vibe, responding to the suggestion it sounds like Paris in the late 60s, Andy proposes the feel is much more South Bank than Left Bank. Rottersley Rummage is a very distinctive kind of federal university then, with an unsurprising anthem, given its Midlands musical heritage, and a very charismatic chancellor too. It's a really enjoyable and creative effort from Andy. Hello, welcome to the latest edition of My Imaginary University. And this time it's my huge pleasure to welcome Professor Andy Westwood, who is Professor of Government Practice at the University of Manchester. He's also got other vital jobs, such as advising the House of Lords on stuff. And I'm sure they need a lot of advice. So welcome, Andy.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here with you now.
So it's great to have you. No, so for those who've not listened to this before, the idea of this session is that I give Andy the opportunity to create an ideal university, a magical imaginary university, where he can create his vision for a higher education institution, which is like no other. So he's got free rein to be as creative and as constructive and interesting as he likes across a range of dimensions. So let's start at the big picture. What kind of imaginary university are you offering us, Andy?
Well, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this because there are bits of every university kind of going in the world as well as the UK that I like. And so I've thought about sort of drafting them all, kind of drafting all of them together into some sort of curate's egg. But you helpfully kind of guided me with five choices. And I think you started off with, you know, is it ancient, red brick, plate glass, post-92, a new challenger? Well, it's probably not ancient and it's probably not a new challenger, but it's probably all the other three in the middle somehow bashed together as a kind of combination of a red brick, a plate glass and a post-92. It may even be a sort of sector defining federation between the three of those things, with all three histories and missions equally important, which already takes me deeply into the realm of the fiction, the fictional kind of creation, because of course that would be almost impossible. But anyway, in my head at the moment, that would be a good thing.
So is it? I mean, it's sounding big and complicated already, right?
Yeah, oh, yes.
In terms of
actually, I'm going to make it even more complicated, because I'm going to add FE to it.
Right.
So because FE, as lots of people will know, is as a sector, college is very important to me, kind of part of my sort of formative professional life. I've worked in colleges. It's actually becoming kind of more of a thing in further and higher education, that kind of institutions are beginning to sort of spread out across both sectors. So another element, just to make things even harder, not just for me, but for the regulators, they would find this very challenging. And there are several of them, obviously. That's not at all problematic. But Yeah, so it would be there would be a bit of plate glass, a bit of FE and HE, mixed economy, further and higher education. There'd be a bit of post 92 and probably a bit of red brick as well.
Right. So I can get my head around this conceptually, right? But what I think would be helpful to make this a little more concrete, or indeed brick and glass, would be a kind of notion about the physical location, right? So is this in the greater Wolverhampton area, which is, you know, what one might expect, or is it in fact in Dubai? I mean, where is it located? Is it spread across
it's definitely not in Dubai. That's too hot for me, and what hair I have got is red, so you know, it wouldn't work. You mentioned the greater Wolverhampton area. I mean, that doesn't count as fictional, does it?
No, it isn't. But I think the there is a sense of, you know,
place
is quite important for a feel for, you know, because it could be it's all jammed into one brownfield or greenfield site. It's near a big city and it doesn't need to be Wolverhampton, or it's spread over a large metropolitan and suburban area.
Yeah. So if you're carrying on the sort of fictional dimension, the fictional kind of equivalents of the greater Wolverhampton area that have popped up in great fiction, by the way, Middlemarch, somewhere in the West Midlands. But I'm one of the people in the world who found Middlemarch really, really boring. And it wouldn't be Middlemarch, but it might be Rummage.
Yeah. Yeah,
classic, you know, the kind of classic David Lodge construct, which I think is essentially Greater Wolverhampton, or Howard Jacobson Rottersley. And who could sort of forget the image where the Rottersley, I think it's the Rottersley Polytechnic, is situated in the back of the stand of the local football club, Rottersley Ramblers. Now, nothing obviously would give me greater pleasure than being in having an office at the back of the Rotters. Well, actually, having an office at the front would probably give me greater pleasure of the Rottersley Ramblers or its actual equivalent. So let's settle on that as a location.
That's an interesting mix of real, fictional, and novel, right? So let's go with that then. So it's a big and diverse institution. It's got a wide range of provision. So what's the kind of feel to the place? Is it really edgy? Is it really, you know, a community base? Is it, you know, does it really genuinely kind of care for its students? Or is it, you know, just a brutal, nightmarish dictatorship which you run?
Well, now is probably the time to say I shouldn't be anywhere near running this thing, because anybody, well, probably everybody listening to this, are waiting for that moment where they think, this is completely impractical, is an idiot. It would go bust kind of very, very quickly. It would be in trouble with regulators. It would have funding problems. You know, it just shows you how unrealistic and pie in the sky I am. So I'm gonna, and also I am and would be a terrible manager or vice chancellor. So I'm gonna have to say up front that somebody else is doing that, and it's probably a very good thing that somebody else is doing that. But coming back to you, kind of what are the characteristics? Well, it's all of those things. It's a university that doesn't know its place. And celebrates that fact, and kind of is, you know, that's almost its mission statement. It doesn't know its place. It is constantly annoying people who do or expect it to have. And somehow commercially and institutionally and in terms of the student experience, it's found a way to cope with all of that. And it's thriving, obviously.
So it has. So there's a sense then in which it is bizarrely and inexplicably more than the sum of its parts, but it is very much parts, right? That just happen to be stuck together and exist in some kind of uneasy alignment. And yet somehow when you add them all together, it kind of works, right? So you there's a sense in which you're not going to have a, you know, typical university strategy, are you? Because the bits are never going to agree on it, are they?
No. And university strategies are overrated, let's be honest. I've dabbled in a few, and I can't remember them even when I've just flicked through them or so. I think you may have hit the nail on the head. This is a university that aims to be more than some of its parts, but doesn't always manage to.
So there are lots of parts then.
Lots of parts. Some of which will function.
Yeah, some of which will function. Some of which will be watching the football. But accepting that, you know, strategies in this context aren't going to be particularly helpful. Is there any sense in which it has a unifying mission other than survival or you know, just continued existence? I mean, is there something that does unify it, or is it just down to mutual self-disrespect? Is there a core ethos?
There is, and I think it's partly about place. And it's partly about a commitment to the sort of the place or places that it sits in, and the people in those places, and that's kind of what it's about. And in that regard, it has a lot in common with pretty much all universities in the UK. You know, it's of its place. It's but it is very, very conscious of its role in that place. It's an institution that kind of is responsible to that place and to the people in that place. And it's sort of stayed true to that history, if you like. So it's civic. It's dedicated to improving the kind of the social as well as economic conditions of the places it sits in and serves. But of course, it's also world class. At being part of its place.
Right. That's not much of a strength, though, is it? I mean, it's good, but in terms of, you know, world classness, right? Being part of your place is, it doesn't garner a lot of, you know, research income or Nobel prizes.
Yeah, well, that's got to change, hasn't it? It's got to change in the world around me, not in the institution, because I don't think we should compromise on that. So I'm in danger of kind of growing the mission as we talk. But let me grow the mission as we talk. And I think kind of part of our job is to convince the world around us, and I mean the world around us, starting with the places that are closest to us, but the world beyond it, that actually working in that way and acting in that way is something that the world needs to know about, and the kind of good practice and the sort of influence and the history is something that is worth striving for and worth reforming the systems that sit around us that actually kind of incentivize people not to do those things. So whether it's the ref and the awarding of 2, 3, 4 star or no stars, probably in some cases in our research output, that actually they've got it wrong, not us.
So right, you're not playing the ref game, okay?
Yeah. I mean, I want the research money.
Oh right, okay. That wasn't clear.
No, we are committed to research and research capacity and the application of research in the places we're in. But we recognise that most of the people who fund research haven't got a clue about that, and therefore we would have to engage in some serious campaigning to persuade them otherwise.
Campaigning.
We have a very big public affairs department, obviously.
Campaigning / subterfuge, by the sound of it. But
yeah, dark arts.
So you're subverting the whole system in order to realign it to a purpose which suits your
remember,
mission, which is
we don't know our place,
right?
But we know our place.
Yeah. Nice paradox.
I think it'll right. work.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe. Right. Well, we'll hold on to that because I think it's intriguing. Intriguing as a notion. Right. So that's the research landscape. Right. Two questions. Okay. Right. What in terms of discipline areas? Right. Are you covering the gamut from aerospace to zoology, or are you focusing solely on, you know, things that stopped working in the 18th century? What's your discipline area, and does that cover that include research as well as teaching?
I've thought long and hard about whether we've got a medical school, because obviously they're very expensive, and I'm if we have, it's not a very big one. It might be more like a GP practice in the corner. Yeah, so there's that. I think aerospace is probably going a bit far. But otherwise, I think we'd have a fairly conventional offer. There'd obviously be a lot of politics and policy and social science, because that's really important. And I'd occasionally show up and teach some of that, obviously.
At premium rates, presumably.
Yeah, well, I think you'll find I'll be very reasonable.
Right. Okay. So there's a kind of big social science core at the heart, and that presumably runs through
zoology
levels.
I have been a member of the zoo for quite a big part of my life, and so I'm prepared to bring that in and give it a faculty as well.
Right. Okay. So it's a really broad based, comprehensive university, which both knows its place and doesn't know its place,
and has
which is. Yeah. Okay. What about, so are you recruiting exclusively from the kind of Wrottesley area, or are you actually an international recruiter as well? And what does that mean for the feel of the institution?
Well, I think we would have a high demand from the international student population. Because I think people would see what a visionary and impressive institution this was. And of course, they would be attracted to the area and its assets. But it would also obviously serve the people of Wrottesley, of Greater Wrottesley or Greater Rummage. And it would seek to improve their lives in ways that kind of only the Federated University of Greater Wrottesley could possibly understand.
Right. Okay. So that's,
and it would be accountable to them for that.
Right. How's that going to work then?
I don't know. But
you just say it because it sounds good.
Yeah. Don't forget, the people of Wrottesley don't know their place either. But that's good, as we've already established.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, but okay, right. Thinking again about, you know, the notion of this community, this intriguing university community, which has, you know, many different groupings within it. How well are these different groupings, the chippy, edgy locals and the inspired international students who arrive there, how are they going to get on together? I mean, is there any kind of glue that brings it together other than this notion of we're all in it together, but we don't know what it is?
Well, I think the capacity of people to kind of, you know, come together and enjoy each other's company is important. Somewhere in the DNA of the institution is the kind of belief that mixing people together is a good thing from wherever they come from. Obviously, you can see that on the pitch of the Wrottesley Ramblers, a multicultural side, you know, some great European players, Brazilian players, as well as locals. I mean, the locals aren't as good, obviously, but the principle is there, and I think that's important. But of course, the historical economy of the area has it's exported its talents over many hundreds of years, and people are familiar with its outputs, with the legendary cars that it made in the 1970s, the industrial processes it gave to the world in the 1770s, and the music that it exported to the world, kind of across all of those eras. So people want to be there. It's great. Yeah. Cool.
And presumably the notable alumni that have left the institution over the years.
Well, yeah, and the ones that are still alive will obviously still have a role in some shape or form. But they will be ambassadors for this venture.
So it's a very interesting kind of sense of community that you have in terms of, you know, a student experience. Then are there kind of distinctive characteristics? I mean, would a student expect themselves to be involved in, you know, political debates of all? It doesn't matter what course they're doing. Is that the kind of feel? Is it a kind of place where ideas collide, or is it a kind of place where people just get drunk and fight each other? I mean, what's the vibe from a student perspective?
Well, I'd take a very dim view of the latter, but I suspect it might happen from time to time. I think ideas will collide and ferment. I think the desire to sort of bring people together and take people out of their comfort zones and put them in places that they're not used to, whether that's international students and people from the local area or people studying a level two or level three FE course and postgraduates together learning from each other, at least something, I think would be a sort of key defining element of not just the ethos, but the kind of day-to-day student experience of the place.
Yeah. Okay. That's a novel and interesting. What about, where do you sit in the university rankings then? Is that something that you care about? Is that another system that you're going to try and smash?
I think if it's possible, we'll sit at multiple places in the rankings in our constituent parts, which I hope would be confusing enough for the people that compile these things to make it very hard to pigeonhole us. We would be top 10 in the world in some things. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. We may only be top 10 in the Greater West Midlands for some other things, but that's okay. That's okay. We're entirely comfortable with that. And even the kind of the top 10 sort of scholars and courses have got something to learn from the others that sit within our kind of greater diaspora.
Okay. So that's an interesting challenge, I think, for the world's rankers for dealing with you, which I'm sure they will embrace.
I'm sure.
You've already ruled yourself out of the running for being the vice chancellor, right? So, but what? But you are willing for a price to do guest lectures. But what's the? Is the leadership of the university in any way different, or is it kind of fairly standard model? How does that come together? Is this? Have you got some kind of quasi democratic notion associated with it, or is it? Fairly standard. What's your thinking on that?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who run universities and colleges in England today who could cope with this model, and I think they'd see the excitement in the day to day challenges that I would that vision has sketched out for them. So I think it would be relatively conventional. You know, we'd have a Senate, we'd have a senior team, we'd have a vice chancellor, we'd have a chancellor, we'd probably have a few patrons. I don't think we need a sort of world changing model. It's just more what those people value and how they operate that matters. I mean, I don't see anyone kind of bringing the professional management skills of Dominic Raab to the institution, for example. We wouldn't have any of that. And equally, you know, we'd want people to that either ran the institution or taught in the institution to, you know, have more kind of empathy and ability than Liz Truss or Kwasi Kwarteng. But still, there would be some important kind of considerations in the mix. But lots of people in the sector would love to work at this institution.
Yeah, and I'm sure they would be intrigued.
You wouldn't you? Why don't you come? You could make it, Matt. You could make it happen.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think part of the challenge for any vice chancellor or senior leader within what is, you know, undoubtedly an exciting and vibrant organisation, right, is all universities have little fiefdoms, you know, little tribes and territories, as they were once described, right? And getting them to pull together in any meaningful way is one of the joys and challenges of anyone in a senior leadership position, right? I have to say, it sounds, from the way you've described this august university, that would be a challenge and a half, to say the least, for any leader, would it not? But what you'd be looking for is someone who is able to persuade the outside world that all those different elements, when you add them together, are terrific. So they need to be, you know, they need to be a real communicator and a storyteller, don't they?
They do, and I think in our heart of hearts, we know that that's the case with every institution in the sector. You know, it is made up of fiefdoms and people with different values and objectives. And so, you know, what you're sketching out there essentially is the basic kind of job description of any vice chancellor or registrar. And but I think they'd come into this with their eyes open, because you know, you're not seeking to impose a straitjacket on people or a strategy that stops people being the things or doing the things that they want to do. You're seeking to run an organization that, as you so perfectly put it, is more than the sum of its parts. But there are lots of parts, and they're very different, and that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I think it is an attractive proposition, particularly when you put a generous salary and perks.
Does advice transfer get a house? I'm receiving emails from headhunters as we speak, offering me shortlists of recent vice chancellors and others. And you know, I mean, it's a deeply impressive list.
We obviously have people beyond the research assessors and the university league table compilers that we've got to engage with, including a whole raft of regulators that universities have to deal with, which causes challenge from time to time. So what's your attitude? How would you approach dealing with the regulatory architecture?
Well, it's clearly not going to be straightforward. That will come as no surprise to anybody, not least those people that work in existing regulators. So let's not pretend otherwise. But I think again, this is a university that doesn't know its place, but knows its place. And I think kind of its role is just as I sort of set out in research terms, you know, it's there trying to persuade the people who oversee and fund research that this is a worthwhile application of new knowledge to its kind of mission and its surrounding places. I think the same would have to be true for teaching and for the regulators that oversee, whether it's the FE bits or the HE bits. I look into my crystal ball and I see a time of great change for those regulators in coming years. And so I think it would be our role to help fashion that change and to make sure that the regulatory framework and the funding framework and the kind of accountabilities locally and nationally would fit the kind of model. You know, we would be in there campaigning and influencing exactly the kind of nature of regulation, rather than rocking up to the doors of the regulators trying to justify our model or our approach, or, God forbid, sitting on a kind of Monday morning in our offices quaking at the latest communication from the office for whoever or the office for wherever.
So you want to anticipate change in the system, but also design that change in a way that matches your institutional self-interest perfectly.
and others. We're not selfish.
No, obviously, regulators are renowned for their flexibility and open-mindedness in dealing with the institution. So how are you anticipating? I mean, there might be pushback, right? So are you prepared to barricade the doors to stop them getting? I mean,
to stop them getting out? Yes.
Yes, stop them getting in.
Oh, sorry, getting in. Well, no, I don't think we would have a siege mentality. I think we would be very happy to offer our wisdom in how to help regulators kind of work with institutions that are difficult to pigeonhole, that seek to achieve great things in a significant number of areas. And in a sense, that's the kernel of this. How do you break out of the kind of straitjacket that I was going to say our regulatory model, the series of regulatory models that oversee post-compulsory education in England? How do you kind of break out of those kind of silos, and that the inevitable tendency that kind of narrows the definition of what institutions can and should be? And I think that's a really important kind of element of not just this institution, but all institutions in the regulatory framework. We should seek to be different and to challenge and to test those who seek to regulate us and define us or to tell us what to do. Well, and this has been the theme of my entire professional life, of course.
I absolutely, and I wholeheartedly endorse that. And I'm sure the regulators of various stripes will welcome your input, advice, and steer on this. So I think that's clear. So that's another sector leading approach that the university is offering, which is great. So with the Andy, there are other distinctive features of, what we will now call Wrottesley Rummage that you want to highlight. Any other interests that you might wish to articulate?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of important ones, but both of which go to the student experience, I think, which I'm sure you'll enjoy. I think the first is a really good thing and a really important thing, and that's that. That this institution, this federation of institutions, would have an absolutely huge student union with an amazing kind of performance space and bar offer and catering, street food probably. But it would be, I mean, obviously the last time I came to, which is quite a long time, I think it was the last time I came to visit you in your August offices, I took a photo of the plaque, the Paul McCartney and Wings plaque, and we would seek to be as significant in musical history as the University of Nottingham has been. I was briefly events officer at the University of Manchester Students Union. I was terrible, by the way, but it left a big imprint on me, and that's going to be a major feature of this institution. I think the other thing, which is slightly less, which is different, but also speaks to the student experience, is that I would ensure that no part of this university would have a hub for anything. Hubs would be banned because hubs are rubbish. And hubs usually mean a poor service taken from something that might have been a better service beforehand. and so there would be no hubs whatsoever. I was going to ask you
if you wanted to ban anything, and you're obviously banning hubs. That's a structural prohibition, but are there any behaviors or activities that you would wish to outlaw as well, or are you so free and easy?
We're a very tolerant institution, and when we welcome everybody. So I wouldn't seek to ban or enforce any behaviours beyond that.
Excellent. So we've got a super students union, no hubs.
That would be amazing.
A great and vibrant music scene. I mean, the more you've described this multifaceted, multi-part institution, right, the more it's beginning to sound like, you know, a series of interconnected Parisian universities in the late 60s. You know, it's got that countercultural feel to it, but in the Midlands, you know, which gives it its down-to-earth, much more working class edge than perhaps may have been evident among the Galois smoking philosophy debating middle classes of Paris in 68-69.
It would be more South Bank than Left Bank. I mean, that's niche, but yeah. That's another one to add to the strap lines. I mean, yeah. This notion of federation is increasingly interesting, I think, because yes, that's definitely one model, but of course, it sounds, I'm sure it sounds ridiculously fanciful and bonkers to not just to the regulators that we've so thoroughly discussed, but to colleagues in further and higher education in England. But of course, it's actually a model that exists in the US.
Absolutely.
In fact, it's arguably it's the defining model that exists in the US. If you look at particular state systems,
yep,
that have grown up over time, and they serve their place, and they exist, and they contain all of these constituent parts, from the equivalent of community colleges through to kind of elite, yep, research intensive kind of institutions. And having spent, I was fortunate enough to spend a chunk of time in the US before Christmas, so I got to kind of tour some of these institutions, like the University of Michigan, for example. I mean, enormous institution, income of $8 billion, which when I was there was exactly the same as £8 billion because Liz Truss was prime minister. And an endowment of like $20 billion a year, yeah. but that's precisely how these institutions exist. So yeah, you know, what might sound ridiculously naive, impractical, and couldn't possibly work in financial or regulatory terms is exactly what does work,
yeah,
in the US sort of state system. So there you go.
Yeah, I completely get that, and I think it shows you're onto a winner. I mean, this is again very much you setting the trend, the future for higher education in the UK. Drawing on the best international models, but also challenging all the conservative with a small c stereotypes and assumptions about the way HE and FE should be organized in this country. So yeah, I think you're driving a very nicely styled coach and horses through all of that.
Well, deliberately so. I mean, I think to be serious for just a second, the divisions that exist between HE and FE are the minute you travel anywhere beyond England, and that includes Wales, yeah, and Scotland, by the way, the minute you kind of move out of England, you realise how crazy our situation and the kind of disconnection between those two sectors is. Yeah. And going back to the kind of regulatory and oversight point, the way we seek to run both of those sectors so differently, with different incentives, different types of accountability, different funding systems, is just nuts.
Yeah,
and it needs to change. And I think if this imaginary university can kind of help push that change or test people's attitudes to that, then that would be great.
Well, it'll be a fine achievement. So one final thing then, Andy, right? You mentioned, you know, the importance of music to, you know, institutional success and, you know, legacy and environment. Every great university needs an anthem, needs a song that defines it. What would this institution's top tune be?
Well, I mean, it's a long list. And with a student union and a kind of musical heritage as impressive as ours is, it would be tough to choose this. I mean, I, as I say, I was events officer, not in Rottersley, in Manchester, and you know, it did send me back to kind of some of the bands that we had at the time I did book some awful. I mean, given that it was Manchester in the 1980s, you'd think it'd be easy, wouldn't you? But no. and so instead of you know, the Stone Roses, I managed to book bands like Putting Crew, who, I mean, that would be a good. I mean, that's a good. I mean, in a sense, that's a name that encapsulates some of the attitudes to higher education we find in this day and age, and in fact their only hit, I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight, could also be a metaphor for universities in the grip of the current policy environment, and I remember them playing, actually, and they had such a shortage of songs that they played that when they started, and then they came on the encore and they said, Manchester, you've disturbed this, and they played it again. I don't know what this Manchester always had done.
Always the sign of a great artist.
So it's not that.
Yeah, it's not that one.
It's
right?
It's not that. Nor actually the last band I saw there were Echo and the Bunnymen. So it could be The Cutter to carry on that theme, which is a great song. No, but it's not going to be that either. I mean, obviously it almost certainly has to be by Slade. And I've narrowed it down to two. I mean, Noddy Holder would probably be Chancellor.
Yeah.
It might be Robert Plant, but it, I mean, it would certainly be one of the two. There may be joint chancellors, but the anthem would almost certainly be either "Know Who You Are" by Slade or "Take Me Back Home."
Fantastic. Right, listen, Andy, we need to stop, but that's a great way to wrap up the presentation of what will undoubtedly be, you know, one of the world's leading multi-dimensional universities. So it will blaze a trail for the future of higher and further education in the UK. So thanks ever so much for dreaming it up.
It's been a pleasure.
I do hope you enjoyed this edition of My Imaginary University. There should be more episodes along soon. In the meantime, you might like to listen to the equally higher education focused podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I talk to senior university leaders, most of them registrars or equivalent, about their careers and various bits of HE stuff. Just Google it to find many interesting episodes to listen to.